Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we continue our coverage here of the Super Bowl, big game, Host Committee's Media Center on Radio Row in the Montreal Convention Center, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso. We're celebrating big game week in New Orleans, and I was just talking to somebody. It's amazing the people you meet. I was talking to somebody from Ireland and telling him what a beautiful country he had, he lives in, and his name is John Patrick McQuaid. Or Michael Patrick McQuaid, and it seems like me telling people my name's Jean-Luc Boudreau from Louisiana, but that's his real name. And the only reason I mention that is during the course of the conversation, we were talking about the troubles and how it's more than a religious difference in Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestant. It goes back to Trevelyan and food, etc. Not to teach history here, but Joshua Fisher Birch joins us, researcher at the Counter-Extremism Project. As we recover from the Bourbon Street attack, it seems like a lot more than 34 days ago. And what causes radicalization? And there are some common themes, and that, of course, was a big problem in Ireland back in the day. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How about yourself? Thank you for having me here today.
Thanks for taking the time. So in the time since the Bourbon Street attack, have we learned anything more about the attacker or more about the way that it fits the profile of somebody being individually radicalized?
It's important to note that the investigation is still ongoing, and federal authorities are still continuing to look into the perpetrator and look into his background, looking into his online activity, and seeing what was there. There's a little bit more that has become public, but for the most part, a great deal of information that we knew previously is still what we have to go by.
What did we learn? What else has become public?
Well, primarily, I mean, what has been known is that on his way to New Orleans was that he released videos where he threatened his family, and he had spoken about potentially committing an act of violence against his family before realizing that that would not propel the message forward that he wanted to. The investigation has looked into the fact that he Googled the 2024 Christmas attack in Germany that happened shortly before his attack. And it's important to note that that attack was not done by a supporter of ISIS. That was done by an individual in Germany who was mimicking ISIS tactics that have been used to using vehicles to attack crowded areas. So this is a attack strategy that is, you know, it has been used by ISIS supporters and has been used by others, and it's something that the terrorist group has put out in their propaganda. And other than that, the investigation is ongoing, and we all hope that more information is released.
You recommended last time we spoke a book by John Horgan, and I got the book, and I'm about halfway through it, and what amaze me about commonalities, I guess, between people that are self, is that the phrase self-radicalized, I guess, or the lone wolves? Is that
the term generally is lone actor.
Lone
the
actor, okay.
I'm sorry, but please continue.
No, that's okay. But what amazed me was the differences or the parallels between, is it really about the organization or is it really about them feeling as though they are empowering themselves, right?
Yeah. I mean, this really is across different ideologies. It's across different forms of, you know, violent radical ideologies. Really what we're talking about is we're talking about the factors that lead people to mobilize, to commit acts of violence. To make another recommendation, actually, the National Counterterrorism Center has a pamphlet that they put out in 2021 that looks at these mobilizing factors that I would recommend looking at. It's called the Mobilization Indicators Booklet. And a lot of this phenomena is, this is across different ideologies. These are, when it comes to online radicalization, when it comes to self-radicalization, and as well as people who are radicalized through others, whether that's online or in person, it's frequently a mix. But these factors go across different ideologies.
And that, to me, what was so interesting about the book, because there are different causes, but yet these different organizations pull the same psychological strings to get people to act. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that frequently is accurate. Whatever the underlying ideology of the group or movement is, they're trying to get people to commit acts of violence, and they're trying to persuade them to do so in different ways by making appeals possibly to their sense of justice or their ego. The idea is to make people feel as if they are, important historical actors in some cases who are sacrificing their lives to make an important change. It's preying on insecurities. And, these are things that different groups use in order to recruit, in order to get people to commit acts of violence.
And I think the other thing that struck me reading the book was how the causes get these individuals to do the dirty work for them, and they want no part of it, right? In other words, I'm not about to put a bomb on myself, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to find any weakness that you have, and I'm going to exploit it and turn it against you to get you to wear the bomb, to get you to drive the truck, to get you to do the other thing. Accurate?
Yeah. This is the point of the propagandists. This is the point of, frequently as well, you could even say in some cases, this is the point of the bomb makers. They're not the ones who are actively using the explosives. They're the ones who are experts in constructing the bomb that they then give to someone else. And many of these different groups, there are these different roles that people play in order to keep these violent movements and these conflicts going. So in this case, I definitely agree with you. Part of this is about finding other people who will commit these violent acts.
The trick is now that working back from that, right? Because, pardon me, when it comes to the Bourbon Street attacker, it's easy to go back and say, yeah, check this off, check that off, check that off. How do you predict something like that and prevent it from happening? Are we making any inroads as far as that goes?
It's an incredibly complicated process. It's something that different governments have quite a bit of experience doing. It's something especially this can be important with local governments, as well as in terms of monitoring of social media, as well as, monitoring violent events in real life. But overall, there's quite a bit that is known. A lot of this comes down to, belief in conspiratorial thinking, belief in, the potential use of violence against those of different identity categories is an important part of this, whether that's race or ethnicity or religion, or others. Part of this is also these changes over time, because people change over time and, people's beliefs change, and when that happens and people start mobilizing to violence, that's something that needs to be paid attention to. And there has been quite a bit of research that has been done on this.
So when it comes to an event like this, when it comes to organizations that are tasked with preventing, so we're talking about the Super Bowl is what I'm talking about, and organizations that are tasked with spotting some kind of radicalization like this and preventing it, does that fall primarily upon the Department of Homeland Security or the FBI, combination therein, and how concerned are you about changes at the FBI with experienced agents for political reasons and weakening the country, and our defense against that kind of thing?
Sure. I mean, this is in terms of strategies and responsibility, this is something that's shared by the FBI, by the Department of Homeland Security, in many cases also by state and local law enforcement. In some cases, it can also be the role of, you know, social services organizations that do this as well and that are important in terms of keeping a look after people who are involved with there. In terms of your question related to what is going to happen, I think that the FBI's role in fighting homegrown violent extremism is something that will continue to be a big part of that agency going forward.
When it comes to the Bourbon Street attacker, and, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is they say if you see something, say something. That's about unattended packages. But in hindsight, is there anything that the family or the friends of the Bourbon Street attacker could have seen or what should have seen and then have said something?
I mean, it's very important when people go through these changes, when people's behavior specifically changes, and when they start talking more about violence, that is important. But I think it's also very important to note that the Bourbon Street attacker was not, didn't really play a big role in his community. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a lot of personal connections, and that makes this a lot more difficult.
Any final thoughts?
No, I would highly encourage the people to check out the Mobilization Indicators booklet that was put out by the National Counterterrorism Center.
I looked at it while I was talking to you, and I would suggest the same thing because it goes to, and that's what spawned the if you see something, say something question about potential lone wolf actors. Thank you. I appreciate your time. Joshua Fisher Birch, researcher at the Counter Extremism Project. We're going to come back and talk to a member of the San Francisco committee who's getting ready to take the handoff for the next Super Bowl. We got to get this one over with first, though, of course. Tommy Tucker bringing you a front row seat at the Morial Convention Center, at the host committee's media center, Radio Row, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Back in a flash here on WWL.